This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
It's easy to keep the meditation or keep these teachings, the Dharma, in a kind of a bit of a box where it has its place. It's a Monday night thing, or it's a meditating 3 days a week thing, or it's a meditating every day, or whatever it is, but it stays kind of there. This practice is about formal sitting practice. But for it to have a deep transformational effect on our lives, it needs to push into our ordinary daily life. And the formal practice is very important in that, because some of the way that we bring mindfulness into daily life is our own intention, but a lot of it is just automatic spillover from the training we do on the cushion. Right? So, if we were trying to be mindful all the time in daily life, and we were trying to just keep that intention, just it's hard. But through the practice, through the formal practice, what begins to happen is it becomes more and more of the default setting to have awareness rather than unconsciousness as the baseline. It's really interesting. There's been some brain science research in over the last maybe 10 years, 15 years, and they've figured out that and I'm don't study neuroscience, so I don't know this well, but from what I've read, they've uncovered that they actually call it like the default network. So when you're just like hanging out, looking at like the white wall, your brain is not silent, right? There's a whole network of activation in the brain, and that network is associated basically with memory, planning, and fantasy, roughly. So if you just sit somebody down and don't give them anything to do, the regions of the brain that are active are basically thinking in the past, imagining the future, fantasizing, trying to make the perfect path to happiness, right? Through our thoughts. That's actually called the default network. And that may have some adaptive function for us. But that is definitely not mindfulness. And this is, if you ever catch yourself like with your mouth wide open, like staring at a tree but you're not looking at the tree, and you're completely engrossed in some story in the head, that's what I'm talking about. Not that that's bad, but it's not mindfulness. And so this is how our brains, or this is how what we were born, right? But we actually can train ourselves so that this may be altered, and that our default setting is not going to be perfect clarity, but it may be a lot more mindful than that. And so some of how practice begins to affect us is our baseline level of clarity increases without us even trying to do anything. Again, this is from teacher Shinzen Young. He said that at this point in his practice, this is about 40 years into practice, he said that his most scattered state now is deeper than any meditative state he had 10 years into practice. And so when he's walking, you know, walking to get a cup of coffee and just kind of not actively focusing on anything, he said if he fell into that state at year 10 of his meditation practice, he would have freaked out. And this is just the spillover from our practice. That's part of how practice shows up. But I also want to talk about some things we can actively do. The first thing is to create a daily practice. That's important. And doing it is really hard for almost everyone. It's really hard. In part because what happens is when we sit down to meditate, it is an interruption of the greed, the aversion, and the unconsciousness that's at our backs pushing us like a freight train. It's actually, we have to come to grips in a certain way that our life is being lived in on automatic pilot a lot. And meditation practice, coming to the chair, to the cushion each day, can be a kind of painful reminder of that. And it can be unpleasant as the body settles. It can be unpleasant to just bear with that momentum of the mind. But it's a worthwhile thing to do. And I've talked in here and we've had discussions about creating and sustaining a practice. And so not going to get into that now, but that is a very helpful aspect of this. As we move through our day, we may also become more and more aware that there's a certain pain of unconsciousness, of feeling really disconnected and alienated from ourselves. And so sometimes I'll kind of wake up out of like heavy duty computer multitasking. And I wasn't conscious of it then, but when I actually like close the computer, I'm like, wow, that was actually painful. And I kept my mind going and jumping from this to this to this. And you don't sense it in that moment. But when you stop, it's like, oh, there's actually some pain. So seeing actually directly, there's some pain that comes from unconsciousness, some pain that comes from feeling disconnected from who we are. The body is very useful in bringing more of the practice into daily life. It can be useful to just soften the belly sometimes. That it's a kind of, maybe feels a little artificial, but as one of my teachers, Ajahn Amaro, says, it's really hard to be super anxious when your belly is soft. You can try it. Maybe it can be done. But if you really, really relax the body, relax the belly, the kind of anxious thoughts, obsessions, they just lose a little bit of their force. A little bit of their force. Can be useful to come back to this kind of very simple, neutral sensations of the hands or the feet. That's actually a way of reconnecting. Can use the breath. Just a few deep breaths can have a function of almost like resetting the mind. And may remind you of the practice. And as you practice more, the reminders of the practice become stronger. It's like it reminds you of so much. So we breathe deeply and we've taken so many breaths on the cushion that it reminds you of so much, calls us back. We can also be aware, and this is a kind of probably main practice for me, is aware of emotional reactivity in the body. So what I was alluding to during the meditation, is there are like circuits in the body that register feeling. Craving, urge, any kind of desire or aversion can be sensed directly in the body. And as we move through our day, we may be amazed to see how much our body is reacting to even pretty simple things. Saying hello to somebody. Thinking about having a particular thought. Having a simple conversation. Actually, we're super sensitive emotionally. We don't give ourselves credit for that. And becoming aware of the activity in the body. For me, it's usually in my chest. But just becoming aware of how we're being moved towards or away from people. How we're wanting something or recoiling from something. That this is helpful. And we can apply some of the same equanimity of that okayness, just relaxing into it. We can reflect on the preciousness of life. And this is a little different than the suggestion I gave to Casey earlier. This is actively reflecting on something. One of my favorite quotes from a really beloved Dharma person, Michelle McDonald, who I don't actually know, but I've heard a lot of her talks. And she said the way she defined impermanence is that the difference between everything being totally normal and totally messed up is so thin. And we live taking for granted what our lives are like. It feels so natural and it feels as if nothing could interrupt this. But I reflect on that often, that the line between all of us sitting here practicing together and a lot of goodness is a thin line from things changing, right? From an earthquake or something. And knowing that these lives of ours are very impermanent helps bring the practice more to life, especially for me when I'm suffering. That the reflections on mortality and impermanence are actually not depressing at all. They actually begin to kind of creep into the heart in a way that opens it. Because a lot of suffering is the heart being unmoved and unmovable and just closed, disconnected. And any reflections that we can bring into our minds to soften that is helpful. Say two more things and we've got to stop. You can make listening a practice, almost like a formal practice. That when somebody's speaking to us, that can be a kind of practice. And it's a very generous thing to give someone your deep attention. So when you're in conversations, and we're in conversations a lot, make the conversation a form of meditative practice, of listening deeply, fully, with the whole body, really committing the awareness to that. And when intrusive thoughts come in and we think we have to go and we have to do this or that, at some point we do have to go, right? And we have to think. But in general, we can let that go and just offer that attention, which is a way of loving, a way of loving somebody and a way of bringing this practice into daily life. And the last thing I'll say is that we can begin to ritualize certain behaviors. So for a while, actually it was your homework assignment, was opening doors. When we open doors to bring love, the love to mind. Love in the broadest sense of the word. It could be anything, though. And it doesn't have to be doors, for sure. We can just begin to bring awareness into activities that we ordinarily dismiss. Maybe brushing your teeth or taking a shower. Very simple kinds of activities that can become a way of returning. And much of this practice, as Vinny said last weekend, Vinny said a lot of this practice is about stopping. And to stop takes a little bit, and sometimes a lot, of renunciation. This is not a hot topic in America, renunciation. But it's important in practice. And what we're really doing is we're taking on maybe a little bit of discomfort so that we can be more and more deeply happy and free. But we don't get to skip some of that initial agitation that comes when we stop. That's part of it. So we've got to end. It's good to be with you. And it feels like it'll be for a while that these gatherings will happen. But it's a thin line. We don't know, but it's really nice to be together tonight. Class is done by donation, and it's really it's important to understand the place of money within the Dharma. And the Dharma is freely offered. That's the spirit in which I'm speaking. I don't want anything for this. That's the spirit in which I'm speaking. And we also need money. And that second part seems to maybe corrupt the first part, but it doesn't have to. And so if you're suspicious about what's happening here, I welcome you not to give any money, really. I'm being serious. If you, because that's the best, it is the best way to tell what's a cult. If you don't have to give any money or anything, it's not a cult. And so if you want to test it out, you're welcome to do that. And if you trust what I'm saying, that this is not done for money, that this is the Dharma is given freely, and want to support this, and want to support me, and want to support rent, then please do give.
You have just listened to a podcast from Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society. If you'd like to make a contribution to help support these teachings, please visit againstthestream.org.